Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Carlos Collazo here on a draft podcast. Draft week. It's draft week. Carlos, it's I know crazy. That you're both excited and tired, but it's draft week. How pumped are you?
I am not to the finish line yet, so I still have plenty of energy. I think this is always the week where you kind of – you're at the finish line, and I feel like all of our – the bulk of our work in terms of covering the draft is basically done in terms of like letting you guys know who the players are. Once the reports are done, it's always a great sigh of relief for me. It's kind of a mini finish line. And then the days leading up to the draft are always the most fun because it's nothing but trying to figure out who is drafting which player where. And it's just a bunch of rumors. It does get quiet at times. Maybe not as many rumors or as much clarity as you would like. But right now we're just trying to figure out where the players are going. And that's the most fun part. We just had a mock draft go up a few minutes before we started recording this podcast. So if you guys haven't seen that, that's version 7.0. But yeah, I'm a little tired, but still got plenty of energy to get through this week. I can't wait to see how this unfolds.
So yeah, it has not been quiet today. I feel like today, you know, there's a lot of chatter out there. I think, would you agree?
I think so. I think this morning, as we were kind of starting to continue just the reporting process for this mock, the past 2 years, I would say, the days leading up to the draft, it's almost been like radio silence, where you kind of expect things to come out, and there's really not a ton. Today, we got a few nuggets, and we're hearing a little bit more about a few players further down in the draft, which is always good. Again, with all this stuff, I feel like you feel good about it now, and then who knows what's going to happen on draft night. Everything could go out the window, but I do feel like we had a few moving pieces lately that are worth talking about. I don't know if you want to start at the top of the draft and work down, or how you want to go about it.
But. Well, I think one thing that has made this – I'll throw out a statement that I've heard, and I want to kind of hear if you do agree or disagree. The thing that has kind of helped as far as this year's draft when you're doing a mock is – there's even more certainty. Maybe it's because we don't have the Orioles picking one like we had last year, you know, but last year we felt very confident that Adley Rushman was going to go one. Mm-hmm. This year we feel very confident that Spencer Torkelson's going to go 1-1.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say this year though is this year, everyone I've talked to the last couple of days keeps always kind of saying there's like 8 or 9 guys who we feel very confident are going to go in the top 10. Range. Is that going overboard, or is that fair to say you can shuffle the order you want of them? But I would say, I guess, that there's 8 or 9 guys who, if any of them last on the board past 11, it would be kind of surprising.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would agree. And I'd even say going back to 2018 when Casey Mize was the number one player, we kind of knew he was going to be number one. So basically, since I've been doing this, I haven't really had to guess too much at number one. We've kind of always assumed, and that's always nice to at least have that out of the way to kind of start working on the board.
But it's way different than like 2012, where literally no one outside of like three people knew until the pick was done.
Even in 2017, I feel like there was a group of 5 players where, unless I'm mistaken, I don't know if anyone was certain who was going one in that draft. So it's been a lot easier for me to at least start on the right track, and that's been nice. Hopefully it continues with Torkelson, and I haven't heard anything to lead me to not put him there. But the Tigers have been good to be at number one. I'll say that.
But along those lines, I like talking. I think we've had enjoyed talking in these last couple of days when talking about the mocks about kind of inflection points, friction points, fulcrum points, call it what you want. But these points in the draft where, okay, something could happen here, could go this way or this way, and – that could really shape the next 5, 6, 7 or further picks. Mm-hmm. The first one of those in this draft is at pick 2, right? I mean, that's where And I don't want to overemphasize it, because whoever the Orioles pick is not going to affect who is picked by the White Sox at 11. It's not going to filter down that far. But it absolutely is going to affect who the Marlins take at 3 potentially, or the Royals at 4, and you just kind of keep going down the list. It is kind of an inflection point if they don't go Austin Martin. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. And I think kind of to your point, while I agree that this might not affect who the teams and the teams are taking, if the goal is to get your mock draft as accurate as possible, missing guys up top really hurts, because even though you might have all the right names there, if you miss two, just the ripple effects that causes basically makes your whole top 10 look pretty bad. But I do think two is the first one where things get interesting. We've talked about and we've explored the options of an underslot deal. There have been plenty of rumors about that, whether that's Zach Veen, whether that's a guy like Nick Gonzalez. I still think now that it's more likely than not that they go Austin Martin, because I think at the end of the day, teams want to get the most talented players they can. When you're picking at the top of the draft, I think the goal is just to get impact talent in your system. And I think Austin Martin, I mean, we've talked about the one, number one debate. I think it's closer than a lot of people are making it seem right now. Just with the amount of different people that have Torkelson as the number one guy, I think we're maybe steering too close to the Adley Rutschman type of number one player that, in my mind, I think there's the difference in Martin and Torkelson is much narrower than the number ones we've had in the last two draft class for me. So I think when you're picking number two and you've got a chance to land either of those bats, you just take the bat and you figure out your next pick when it comes along. I don't think you get too crazy. And I think we've talked about this as well. The financial games you have to play to underslot or overslot a player in this year's draft class is going to be even more challenging. So I think kind of all of those things just lead me to believe that, that Martin is probably going to be the guy.
And I probably love game theory way too much, but kind of along those lines, I did want to talk about that for a second though. So because your last mock before this, we had Zach Veen going, you had Zach Veen going to the Orioles at 2. Mm-hmm. And the thing that obviously that does is, and again, I think it should make clear, if the Orioles go someone other than Martin, they're not going to go for someone who's, you know, 8th on their board. They're picking someone who is a top 5-6 talent on everyone's board, or most everyone's boards probably. And they're looking to save a little bit money there to go further down. But it's not like that they're going to say, we're not going to hear them say the Orioles select Patrick Bailey and they saved, it's not the Royals taking Hunter Dozier with the idea that they were going to, come back and get Sean Manea. That's not what we're talking about here. To give a draft example from recent years. But to explain it a little bit from what you just talked about, why is it that it would be difficult to push a guy down this year as opposed to, say, some other years?
Well, I think there are a number of different things that come into play. I think the bonus pools are smaller. I think when you only have 5 picks in 5 rounds, well, a few teams have more or less than
right, 5 picks. But 5 rounds, yeah.
But 5 rounds. I think that you just have less wiggle room, and I think that there's just more risk that in this year's draft, a team can pop one of those guys you're trying to slide down, and with all the different leverage issues that players might have, kind of the confusing times that the players are dealing with in terms of their college situation or future draft years, I just think that it'll be easy, and we've seen it in recent years. We've seen more teams just taking players without having known what their price point was, just saying, we like the player, we're taking him, we'll figure out the bonus. So I think you run into that risk, and you don't have, if you don't get one of those guys to fall, you can't then go draft a high upside high school guy later on and try and make up for it. There's no safety valve if you miss out on those guys, I'll say. So I just think it's more of a challenge to try and slide those guys down. I guess that's maybe the easiest way to... that I can explain it. There might be other factors in there. But
if any team is going to slide a guy down, I do think the Orioles have the best possibility of doing it, because they pick first of all these teams who have kind of multiple picks, supplemental first and then a second rounder as well. They pick 30. That gives them an advantage over the Pirates, the Royals, the Padres, the Rockies, these teams who have a high first round pick, a supplemental first, and then a second, they got to get first shot at those guys. Now, I completely agree with you that in this year's draft, if let's say a high school arm, which often the guys who fall are the high school arms. Mm-hmm. If a high school arm falls, there's no guarantee this year that there's not someone picking at 18, picking at 20, picking at 25 who may say, ah, we'll take them and mm-hmm. we'll think we can get them signed. Having one option to take there, you know, trying to slide a guy is not going to necessarily work out. It's mm-hmm. not like it was, you know, even just in, you know, a few 2012, 2013, 2014. The slot differences, the slots have been compressed. That said, again, those teams, Orioles, Pirates, Royals, Padres, Rockies, those teams have supplemental first and then boom, right back right after it, a second round pick. If you save some money at the top, or even if you don't, if you package those two picks together, it gives you a lot of money. If you said we're going to go high on one and then we're going to go cheap on the other, mm-hmm. it does give you at least some options of doing that, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. It'll be interesting. I mean, we do have a prep pitcher sliding into that range in our latest mock draft. You can go click on the link to see who it is.
Pretty good. I like that. That's a good teaser. That's going to make people click right there. BaseballAmerica.com.
I can't guarantee it's the Orioles, but, you know, there's a chance it is.
But okay, after the Orioles at two, mm-hmm. what's the next pick? I'll put it this way. Let's make it – I'll put you on the spot selfishly for you. What's the next pick that could really screw up your mock?
It's definitely the Royals. I mean, we've gotten Asa Lacy really consistently with the Marlins, and I think that if it's not going to be Asa Lacy there, something happened in front, so I don't think that would really mess up the mock too much when you get to four. But Kansas City, I feel like, is tied with – I feel like they're tied with a couple different players that could kind of how we talked about with two, just depending on who goes. There are teams behind the Royals who are in on certain guys and out on other guys, like Zach Veen. He's got so many landing spots throughout the first that it would make me feel okay. Nick Gonzalez has some in other spots. I mean, the Mariners are a team who, if Zach Veen was available, I think they would be interested in Nick Gonzalez. If Zach Veen was the guy that came down there, I don't know that the Mariners would be, just based on what we're hearing now. So I think that's another interesting one. I wouldn't be surprised if there are some other players they were thinking about there. Heston Kerstad is a guy who's getting a lot of intrigue in the top 10. And I think in this year's draft in particular, you look at his profile, his track record, his power. If you think that Kerstad was about to have the J.J. Bladé kind of season and you really buy into that, I mean, you take him there, because J.J. Bladé, if we look back at last year, he was thought of as a back of the first round kind of pick. Then he went on that power binge and worked himself into that top five. If scouts and teams thought that Kerstad was ready to do that this year, I mean, that pick could look pretty good in a couple of years. But again, that's just something we don't really know. So I think there are a number of different options there for the Royals. I'm inclined to think they're probably going to go for a bat, but there are just a number of options that make sense there.
That makes me think of a question I had a GM ask me that I think is a good question to ask you, which is, who is the player that you think was hurt the most in the first round? I don't want to bring up someone who's like, you know, going to go what may have gone on day two. And then, but who's a player who is hurt the most by the early shutdown, and who's a player who was hurt the least? I'll give you my version, and I want to hear what you have to say. Because my hurt the least is Zach
Veen. I mean, are we saying outside of your hurt the least is who? Zach Veen?
Zach Veen. For me, probably this is that how the season played out. Mm-hmm. Everyone got to see Zach Veen. Zach Veen had a great start to the season. And I don't know if necessarily a whole lot more had to happen for him to push him further up the draft board.
In terms of separating him from the other high school players, I think that's a pretty good argument. I think if we're moving the conversation outside of guys like Spencer Torkelson and Austin Martin, I think that probably makes a lot of sense. In terms of the guy who's hurt the most, the one guy that I come back to a lot is Garrett Crochet.
Agreed.
I think that's maybe the most obvious one, just because he was a guy who didn't play a lot early in the year because he was dealing with some
one outing.
Yeah, he had three innings and one outing. But he was maybe the most exciting name in the industry last fall based on just the pure stuff, the explosion out of his left hand. And if he had a chance to take the mound every week, show that he could start and continue showing that type of stuff, I mean, you're talking about a guy who could move into top five kind of range, like what we saw with Max Meyer. Max Meyer really came out and showed that he could start and hold his electric stuff. Crochet's pure stuff is comparable to that. And he's a 6'6" left-hander. So if he went out and was just solid, I think you're looking at a guy who really jumps up boards. But now if you're looking at his, just his starting track record, it's not very good. So you're basically banking on the pure stuff, figuring itself out. And you're confident that regardless of whether he threw three innings or not, you just like the talent. So I think that's a guy who's definitely hurt by this just because he just didn't have time to kind of show it and make teams feel confident.
The other one I'll throw out is Ed Howard. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm curious to hear your, I'm curious to hear this one. Cause I feel like I might think in different terms at this point.
And again, admittedly, there's a couple of things that would, I could counter my own argument, which is that Ed Howard is playing, you know, upper Midwest. Mm-hmm. The caliber competition he's going to regularly face is, he's not going to, you know, face elite arms week in, week out. So he's not going to get that chance of a kid playing in SoCal to kind of show up in marquee matchups week after week, like, you know, like some of those guys. That said, I do think a guy like Ed Howard, a strong, you know, he's the kind of guy who could have had that April, May where, okay, everyone's got to come back in to see him again. Man, he's really has taken a step forward. Now, admittedly, maybe part of that is maybe he's hitting against a dude, you know, not every week who's a top five round talent. But I think he's a guy who the fact that him and Austin Hendrick, you know, these guys who just never got a chance to let everyone see him this spring, you just didn't get to see that same – you don't get to have that same comfort level that you got with a Zach Veen. As much as everyone is talking about how they're learning stuff from the Zoom calls and how they're doing a lot of video and all that, at the end of the day, if you're a GM, if you're a scouting director, if you're a special assistant, and you sat and watched Zach Veen do it this spring, early in the spring – it gives you a comfort level that maybe you don't have with a guy who literally never got to, you know, never got to do that for you.
Yeah. I was going to be more against this Ed Howard take, but I think the key is he was going to be one of the players who's coming to tournament as stars. And I think just like we saw Jordan Adams, I mean, vastly improve his stock at that tournament a few years ago, become a first round pick for the Angels. Ed Howard is already way more established than Jordan Adams was coming into that event. So if he went there and hit, I do think that's an event that can really kind of make you or break you, maybe not break you in terms of Ed Howard. But
it could have made him.
This is definitely not a good shortstop class. No. Maybe that's kind of relative to the classes we've seen in recent years. But, I mean, Ed Howard is our top shortstop, like pure shortstop. You could talk about Nick Gonzalez maybe playing there or Austin Martin maybe playing there. But in terms of pure shortstops who you know are going to stay at the position, Ed Howard is the top-ranked guy, and he's at number 20 on our board. That's significantly lower than the typical top shortstop in a class, particularly on the high school side, where that's normally like kind of the meat of your class is the high school shortstops. You normally have toolsy guys. He's not as toolsy as some of these guys. So I think there are just a little bit more questions about his bat right now. There's no questioning the defense, but at the end of the day, teams want hitters.
And the other thing is, again, it's a bad year for college shortstops too. Nick Gonzalez, Austin Martin were two guys who were talked about. You know, Austin Martin didn't play any shortstop this spring. Mm-hmm. Nick Gonzalez did, but everyone kind of, there's a lot of thought that Nick Gonzalez basically is, he's a bat who maybe plays shortstop, more likely probably plays second base or somewhere else. If you're talking pure shortstop, you go a long ways on this college lift too. I mean, Nick Lofton is pretty much where you go, and that's kind of a late first round guy.
Yeah. I think so. I think there's a chance Lofton could sneak into the middle just because, like we talked about, it's not a great shortstop class. He does everything pretty well. And he's another guy who, when you just kind of look at his overall track record in college, it's pretty good. And the power is trending in the right direction as well. So that's definitely an interesting bat. I'm curious to see where he goes. But
so
I think there's one other fulcrum point in the top 10.
That we could. What is that?
I'm curious to hear what you think it is or if any jump out to you.
I would say to me, the other one is right at that 10-11 spot. That's the one I keep hearing again, because I keep hearing, you know, there's like 8-9 guys that you feel pretty good about that they're going to go in that top 10. And let's say that all 9 of those go. Then all of a sudden, let's get wacky. because it wouldn't surprise me at all if there's a pick at 10, 11, 12 that's like, oh, okay, we're going in that direction now. Yeah. Because, I mean, it does feel like that's where the high school bats, though, start to line up again.
Yeah, I think that's fair. For me, at like 10 or 11, really 11 or 12, I think that's where just kind of the draft opens up a lot more, and it's just a lot harder to figure out, like, these are the players, this is kind of the range. I think you could have a bunch of different players coming into play that made a lot of sense. The last one, I think there's a third one in the top 10 for me, and maybe it's just because this team has been really hard to kind of lock down the entire time we've been doing this, is the Pirates. Just because kind of where they're falling, I feel like there are a number of players that might be available to them depending on how things go in front of them in terms of different demographics. High school hitter, we've heard high school pitchers linked to them, we've heard college pitchers, we've heard college hitters. So there's just no real strong feel for which player they want, and maybe that's just because they're in a position where they're just going to take whoever the best player is that makes it to them. Maybe I'm just overthinking that a little bit, but they've been tricky for me, I would say.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You know, I think, as you said, once you get to about 15, 16, at that point, it's kind of wide open, which is normal for a draft. I'd flip it now. To me, there are a couple of wild cards on the player side. Mm-hmm. And one I'll throw out with that I kind of want your kind of input on is we have Garrett Mitchell 6 on our board, our BA 500.
Yeah.
And we don't have Garrett Mitchell going anywhere near 6 in your latest mock, Carlos. So.
Yeah, these teams are crazy. What are they doing?
So,
but no. Well,
yeah, explain.
Yeah, Garrett Mitchell, he's been basically since we started doing these mock drafts, or at least when we get to a range where you start to get some real information about mock drafts, he's been a true wild card. I would say the past 2 weeks, outside of today, the past 2 weeks, he was trending in the wrong direction. I kept hearing more and more, Garrett Mitchell, we think he might be slipping. Just teams are concerned with the diabetic aspect of everything, the hit tool, like we understand he has bat to ball skills, but what is the quality of the swing? Is he going to be an impact type of hitter? Today, I started hearing more rumors that he was trending in the opposite direction, and that teams weren't as concerned about the medical. So I think this could be a situation where it's just split camp. Some teams are more concerned about the diabetic issue, and other teams are really buying into the tool set and the upside, because and I keep going back to this, but I think Garrett Mitchell is one of those players that has tremendous upside and a tremendous floor. That's why we have him kind of ranked where we do, just based on the feedback that we got from scouts throughout this process, even going back to his high school days. I mean, if he is not an impact master kind of hitter, you still have an 80 grade runner with plus defense in center field, plus arm strength, very good bat to ball skills, and the ability to kind of hit above his true talent because of his speed. Like, I would expect him to have an inflated batting average for a long time because he routinely posts 80 grade times out of the box. The upside is you get a guy who's all that, plus he hits 20 plus home runs a year. That's a perennial all-star if he taps into that power. I just feel like at a certain point, the upside is too much to pass up on. And he was off to a really good start this spring. So I'm not in conversations when teams are talking about how they're factoring in the medical and how you assess the risk of the type 1 diabetes. But clearly that is really an impact for some teams. But I think that, I don't know, I think middle of the first round at some point, he's going to come off the board. I'm very curious to see the team that does it, because whoever takes him in that range, I'm going to think that's great value just based on where we have him on the board.
Yeah. So again, you get past that and it's really now we're into the wide open, you know, obviously, understandably, especially, and I think that it's notable to say this, especially in a draft this deep, and especially in a draft this deep where with less information, there's a lot of information still, but less information, the board should be more divergent than a normal year, because to take just a couple of examples that we have kind of in the, you know, in the back half of the first round and even into the supplemental. Okay. Mm-hmm. Bryce Jarvis, Bobby Miller, pair of college pitchers, both of whom really were impressive at times. And Bryce Jarvis was arguably the most impressive college pitcher in the class. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say. Well, I could see much more divergent opinion on a guy like that this year than there is, because it's kind of coming. He took a step forward. Mm-hmm. It looked like in that first essentially month of the season, Bobby Miller took a bigger step forward. Are those guys who, like, you know, there could be, or am I, it would it be other guys or the kind of guys who would be the ones who would have a more differing opinions on?
No, I think there are a lot of college pitchers who kind of fall into that bucket. I think even if you had a full season and you kind of let these guys line themselves up, I think teams would have had a really tough time getting any sort of consensus on how they lined up, just because the talent and the depth of this college pitching class is so strong. I would even point to the comp round. If you're a BA subscriber, look through the comp round kind of as we go over this conversation. But there are so many college arms who impressed scouts this year, or their pitch data looks really good as teams are kind of going over and over and over them as we lead up to the draft. There are guys like Kyle Nicholas who came out and pitched really well. There are guys who went the other direction. Majinski, who was a guy who had a chance to be a top 10 kind of pick entering the year, but didn't pitch as well. So how teams evaluate those first 4 weeks and decide what's real and figure out, were they trending in the right direction? Was there something that's easily fixable that we saw? I think that is the tough scouting challenge that a lot of these teams have, and they're all going to come to different conclusions. And honestly, the college pitching is just incredibly tough to figure out in this range, because the depth of it is just so good. And we didn't have time for them to line themselves up. Maybe if we had a full season, it would be very clear who was the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th college arm. Maybe that is how it would have played out. But in the time that we had so far, it wasn't the case. So,
and again, we're going to have college pitchers taken in the second round who would have comfortably, if they went in the supplemental or even the late first round last year, we'd have been like, that's a good pick at that spot, because he's, you know, the best pitcher on the board. And this year, that guy's not going to be the best pitcher on the board for quite a while. And that's one of the things that stands out, you know, again, very positive about this class. We've talked all about how deep the college pitching is in this class. Where else, Carlos, do you think, especially when we get into the early part of day two of the draft, where is the depth of the class in addition? Let's grant the college pitching is great. Mm-hmm. Where, in addition to that, what else is really impressive in this class?
Yeah, I think at times the college pitching can maybe dominate the conversation a little too much. I know I've talked about it a lot, so maybe it's just a me problem. But I think the high school class as a whole is very deep. I think there are a lot of really intriguing hitters in this class. I think the pitching is strong. I don't think the class at the prep level is geared one way or another in this range. I think at the top, the high school outfielders are pretty impressive. But just the bats and the athletes on the high school side that you could be looking at in this range, there are a lot of really interesting guys. Mason Wynn is a guy, JJ, you saw as an underclassman, and he jumped off the pay or off the field to you, like, right away. Just the athleticism, the mm-hmm. toolsiness he has on both sides of the ball. Kevin Parada, I won't talk too much about him because I talked too
you
much
love about him.
I love the bat. Isaiah Green is another bat that there are people who compare him to Pete Crow Armstrong. I mean, this is a guy that is in the 40s on our board who's being compared to pretty much a no-doubt first-round pick. Guys like Justin Lang or Alejandro Rosario or Victor Maderos or Carson Montgomery are all pitchers who have first-round talent, but in this class, they get slid down the board more because there's really good college pitching. So just more risk in that demographic. But if you want to look at the upside and dream on these kids, all of them have phenomenal upside. I mean, a guy who wasn't even going to play this year, Daxon Fulton, is a left-handed pitcher who could have been a first round type of talent if he didn't have Tommy John surgery. I think they're just the depth overall. I mean, we haven't even talked about Carson Tucker, who maybe was the biggest riser in the high school class this spring after adding a bunch of strength.
Which is crazy, because Cole Tucker was the biggest riser in his class too.
Yeah, it's something the Tucker boys do. I guess they just improve when they need to. So
hey, Carson did it without having to go to NHSI. So he gets a credit over Cole there, because Cole did it at NHSI.
Yeah, but I just think that it's very clear to me that this is the deepest draft that I've covered since I've been at Baseball America. And that also makes it so painful that this is the year we have 5 rounds. Because if we had a typical draft year, I don't want to be crazy here, but I feel like this is a draft we could look back on as one of the better drafts in recent history. We have to see how it all plays out, obviously, but man, it's just so loaded. And if you're a team that's not spending, or I know there are rumors about teams not like spending the money on these players, that is the stupidest thing I could ever imagine.
And I will note that if you don't spend it, you're saving yourself basically nothing in 2020, because you're only spending $100,000 per player.
Exactly. It's all deferred anyways. Go get these players. They're really good.
Yeah.
I just love this class.
Well, okay, let's wrap it up with this thing, kind of to on day two and going past day two. What is your sense of what's going to happen? First off, what's going to happen rounds 4 or 5? Where do we think we get into the let's make a deal portion of this draft? Is it starting the fourth? Is it getting the fifth? Or is it team by team?
I think it's going to be team by team. Your last point, I think, is the best one. Depending on what teams target up top, if you have teams getting really aggressive up top, they might have to save money with their fourth and fifth picks. And I think there are going to be plenty of players that they'll be willing to take a deal because they're trying to get drafted in this short.
Which, by the way, though, but I will note, if you took a bargain basement guy in the fifth round and let's say sign him for $100,000, mm-hmm. that's not going to give you a whole lot. This isn't the same thing as you've already noted. This isn't the same as going like the Mets did and going senior sign for basically, you know, most of day two. Mm-hmm. By doing so, you would save yourself if you had a mid fifth, you know, let's say even a top of the fifth round pick, you're mm-hmm. going to save yourself about $300,000, which helps you. Yeah. But even doing that in that round and the fourth is still going to only save you like 700,000. Yeah. It's not going to save you those millions of dollars that you would potentially, you know,
which could help you sign one of the guys you took earlier. So it definitely could matter. And I think there are going to be plenty of players who are not like bottom feeders that might be willing to take deals like that just because of all the uncertainty. So I do think we'll see some teams maybe take advantage of the leverage they might have in this situation. But I think that at the same time, if there are other teams who play it straight up, they could take advantage of the depth of this class basically just by signing guys at slot, kind of just going down their board like you would if it was an NFL or an NBA kind of style draft. And I think you could benefit from that because we're talking about the amount of depth in this class. I do think it's strong in that 3 to 4 to 5 round range. If you just played your board straight up throughout this draft, I think you could end up with a really good class. So I think it just kind of depends on the strategy you take in your top few picks will determine how you kind of have to manage the last few.
Again, now we're not saying our board is the perfect, you know, summary of how guys are going to go. And some of these guys may not even, you know, there's also asking prices and all that. Some guys may be better off to go back to school, but like, when I look at guys who we have outside of the 160 or you know, on our board, like a Mason Erla, you know, for example, or, you know, Kale Emsoff, or, you know, you could just keep going down the list. I'm just looking about, you know, college guys who aren't right now, like very conceivably Jordan Woe, you know, I mean, like for Michigan, like, you know.
Oh, Blake Dunn for Western Michigan is
too. Like Dunn, you know, like Will Klein at Eastern Illinois. Like there's a lot of guys who it's like, I don't know if he's going to get picked, but you know what? This guy is really interesting. Mm-hmm. Braden Oldhoff at Tulane. Like I could just keep going down this list and finding guys who I'm like, I think that guy, I could really make a good Hudson Haskins also at Tulane is really toolsy. Now he's a draft eligible sophomore who will be a draft eligible sophomore next year. I think he probably makes it back to school. In a normal draft, though, we'd be talking about that guy as like, that's a really good day two pick. Mm-hmm. We don't know even know if he's going to go on day two this year because it's a 5-round draft. But the last thing with that is okay, going beyond that, how do you think the non-drafted free agent, like, is it going to be crazy busy? Is it going to be some team busy? Do you have, and it's okay, I'm putting you on the spot. If you don't have a sense yet, we haven't gotten to the draft yet, much less the Sunday signing period. So.
Yeah, I think most teams would be pretty involved in at least getting a handful of players. It's hard to say the exact amount they're going to get just because of the number of cuts and releases and how they're going to deal with just roster spots in general at the minor league level. Like, if you don't have places to send these guys and play them, you might not be too busy. And if you're not paying minor leaguers, you're not going to be busy at all. But I think most teams will be pretty interested, again, because I think there are going to be a number of really good players who are worth well more than $20,000. And teams know are worth well more than that who will be willing to take $20,000 this year and just try and get their pro career started. Hopefully we get some more clarity kind of after these five rounds are completed and teams kind of have a better feel maybe for what they're looking for. But I would imagine most teams are involved. I can't imagine there are a ton of seniors who are really dying to get back into the draft market next year when they're a year older and they're 23, 24 in some cases, competing with an even deeper senior class next year. So there's going to be some names.
The flip side, I will say, though, this is the nightmare scenario. This year, there may not be a minor league season. Next year, spring training is going to be one where there are going to be teams who are going to be having to lop off 3-4 teams of rosters to get down to what we expect, not finalized yet, but the expected 4 full season clubs plus 1 complex team, which is what we expect will be the minor league structure next year. It's conceivable that there will be non-draft free agents who sign this year and get released in spring training having never played an actual official minor league game, which I would hate that to happen because that would just awful for the idea of like, oh, it's a minor leaguer. Oh, what was your stats? Actually, I don't have any stats because I got released, you know, my first spring training. And the reality of it is one thing that it's cruel, but it's true. If you're signed for $20,000, if you're signed for even $150,000, they got something invested that there's like, okay, let's give them a little bit more time. At $20,000, you don't have the same compunction of, oh, we can't release this guy. We just
have slump money.
Right. Exactly. First round pick, you have slump money. You know, you're going to get extra chances. And I hope that doesn't happen, but I do fear that could be a possibility of something like that.
Way to end it on the bright note that this is a horrible scenario for players all around, JJ. Thanks.
It's a bright and happy time, 2020, you know. Yeah. But we will continue. We may even do another one of these because this is fun and there's way too much that we can cover before the draft gets started. But we have a mock-up right now at baseballamerica.com. We have reports on 500 players. Yes, they're only drafting. You know, there's only 160 that they're drafting, but hey, we got to write, you know, we cut it down. We would do 800 in a normal year. We cut it to 500 this year and we're really bummed that they're not going further than they are. But Carlos will be on the MLB Network draft on Wednesday and Thursday this year, 2 days. So we'll be continuing to talk remotely, but we've been doing that for 3 months now, so it's not that different. Yeah. But check everything out at baseballamerica.com. If you're not a subscriber already, you can jump in and join us. You know, we have a massive amount of content to get you ready for the draft. And we'll be analyzing it all through and after the draft. baseballamerica.com/shop-now will get you a online subscription, or you can subscribe to the magazine. You can purchase books. You can get single issues. Check that out, baseballamerica.com. For Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.